Hi, I'm Katya.
And I'm Rin.
And we're here at the Commonwealth Center for Holistic Herbalism in Boston, Massachusetts.
And on the internet everywhere, thanks to the power of the podcast.
Woo!
Yeah. Okay, we are not doctors. We are herbalists and holistic health educators.
The ideas discussed in this podcast do not constitute medical advice. No state or federal authority licenses herbalists in the United States, so these discussions are for educational purposes only. Everybody's body is different, so the things that we're talking about may or may not apply directly to you, but hopefully they'll give you some information to think about and research more.
We want to remind you, just like every week, that good health is your own personal responsibility. The final decision in considering any course of therapy, whether discussed on the internet or prescribed by your physician, is always yours.
Yes.
So there. All right, what shall we begin with this week?
I have some shout-outs this week. We've got shout-outs to Bernadette in Ohio, who wants us to talk about headaches, so I'm going to. And to
Leon, who wants to hear about tinnitus, so
yes.
I'm going to talk about that one.
Yay, and also she just finished her master's degree. Go you!
Yeah.
And to Ellie Perry Music on Instagram, who wants a deck of our herb cards. We just had the herb card giveaway on Instagram.
Yes.
And if you missed your chance or didn't win, you can find our herb cards on the website at commonwealthherbs.com/shop. And who else? Abon7, who does skincare. And Lat-Joe, also on Instagram, who met us at Herbstock and is a new listener of the podcast.
Hi.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you guys for reviewing us on iTunes. If you have not done that yet, we would so appreciate if you would, because the more reviews that we get, the more that iTunes will show it to other people, and I don't understand how all those algorithms work, but what I do understand is that more people learning more things about herbalism is more better. So
yeah, and it's probably true on the other services also. Like get your podcast through Spotify or Stitcher or wherever else, then
just click the stars and yeah.
Do the whole thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's give you some actual podcasts.
Yeah.
So that you've got something to rate.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you want to go first this week?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I'm going to talk about tinnitus, and that's ringing in the ears.
You know, it is surprisingly common.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I was about to leap directly into the herbs, but it can come from a variety of different things. For a lot of people, it's just because you get exposed to too much loud noise. Whether that was recreational or occupational or somewhere in between, it's really that it could be that the eardrum itself has thickened in response to the loud noise, and so now it's not as sensitive to minor vibrations. A lot of other issues with tinnitus, though, have more to do with inflammation of the nerves in the ears, and so. When they're inflamed, it's kind of like if you were gonna plug your phone.
I was just gonna say
into
that.
You're gonna plug the jack into your phone, but maybe like you've got one of those cases that's like really puffy and rubbery around the outside, and then the jack you want to use is a little bigger than normal, and it doesn't quite fit, and it sort of goes in, but not quite all the way, and then there's a little buzz. Yeah,
that or kind of like thing. When we get in the car and. We have an older car and it has like an auxiliary input, but it doesn't have like Bluetooth for the phone or whatever. So we have like a little cord that we plug our phone into to get it into the car speakers. But before you plug it in, if the radio is turned on and that cord is just dangling,
there's just this terrible buzzing sound.
There's this terrible like ringy buzzy sound because there's like weird input coming, but it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
That always feels like nerve issue to me. Like, there's weird input, but it isn't actually real.
Yeah. So we have to think about inflammation affecting the nerves in the head, near the brain, in the ears. Okay. And then I guess the other source that we run into over and over again is fluid stagnation in the head, in the ears themselves, or in the sinuses, you know, and the pressure there kind of bleeds over sideways.
Yeah.
So that's
a real factor for me. And I would say that, you know, tinnitus is always defined as a ringing in the ears, but I just want to take a minute to kind of expand basically like everything that you're going to say, even though you haven't said it yet, to noises that aren't actually ringing. So I get a lot of fluid movement or fluid not movement noises in my ears, and that doesn't like meet the strict definition of tinnitus, but it is still wicked annoying. Yeah. And
people are very likely to use the word tinnitus to describe a variety of different sensations, not all coming from the same cause.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyway, like as I'm looking over the list of herbs that you're going to talk about, I just want to like preface that with, even if you have weird stuff going on in your ears that isn't exactly ringing, but is still an obnoxious noise, a lot of these herbs are still super, super useful and they work really great for me.
Yeah. Well, the first one I want to lead with is really our favorite.
It's my favorite.
And this is one that we do find helpful, have found helpful for a number of clients by now, with a variety of different like base etiologies to the problem.
Everything from autoimmune tinnitus, like with Meniere's syndrome, mm-hmm. to even to rock shows, like the whole nine yards, like any kind.
Yeah. It's been very helpful.
Ground ivy, really, yeah.
So if you start with ground ivy and it doesn't immediately cure your tinnitus overnight, don't send us nasty emails. just recognize that there may be other factors going on and there might be more digging that has to be done, and okay. But that said, this is a really effective herb for this problem, and it's one that we turn to over and over again for it. Any time I'm working with tinnitus, I'm probably going to include ground ivy in the formula, even if there are other elements to what's going on that I want to address with different plants.
And you just said, don't write us nasty emails if it doesn't cure your tinnitus. And I wanted to expand on that because, of course, we're not doctors, so we don't cure anything because legally we're not allowed to use that word. And also we don't want to use that word. But we can help with things and herbs can help with things. And
you can write us friendly emails.
You can. And I also want to be clear that I've always had success with ground ivy, but success is not always defined as 100% back to baseline. Everything is silent unless I want there to be noise kind of a situation. Mm-hmm. Success has been defined as, hey, this is a big improvement, all the way through to, hey, that went away. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't always have to be like perfect in order to be great.
Yeah. Anyway, so the herb ground ivy, it's Glaucoma heteracea. This one we know it very well because there's a lot of it here in New England, and it grows in a pretty weedy way.
Mm.
You find it in a lot of parks, here in the city, green spaces, open pastures and fields and things like that. So it's pretty abundant.
If you're a gardening kind of person, you might know this plant as Creeping Charlie or Gill Over the Ground. Mm-hmm. In different regions of the country, it has like different common names.
Right. Yeah. Well, so the primary reason this is so helpful for tinnitus and ringing in the ears is that it's very efficient at draining stagnant fluids out of the ear canals themselves and out of the lymphatic structures that are close to the ear and the nose and the throat. They're just in that whole area of the body. So that's the kind of superpower that this particular herb has, the thing that it's really good at, above and beyond other herbs. Whenever we're dealing with swelling in the lymph nodes or stagnation there, in the ear, nose, or throat, the ground ivy is the first thing that we think of. And again, when there is that ringing in the ears, it's often coming from that kind of stagnant fluid issue. So we turn to this. We primarily work with ground ivy in the form of tincture. Mm-hmm. And usually we're taking it in relatively high doses for acute problems, like if you have a cold coming on and you get an earache, we'll work with ground IV there as well, with the idea that if you keep the fluids moving, you're less likely to, you know, allow an infection to really proliferate, or to like make it easier for your body to fight it off. And that works really well. Doses in that case are, you know, a dropper full or two of ground IV every half hour or every hour, you know, for a couple of days, mm-hmm. while you're working your way through that part of the process. When it's tinnitus, we'd be more inclined to have a kind of more standard schedule, you know, a dropper full of tincture, maybe three times a day, maybe two droppers full three times a day. This is a very, very safe herb. It doesn't have like harsh effects. It doesn't have, you know, potent chemistry, like it's not bursting with alkaloids or something like that.
Yeah, it's really like a just a mover.
Yeah, it's mild. So, so that's an herb that you can take, you know, in relatively high doses and through the course of the day, and also for relatively extended periods of time. And generally, we'd be recommending that you work with this herb, you know, in that dosing schedule for a month or so, and we'll see where you're at the end of that time, with the idea that there should be improvement over the course of it. Okay, so that's ground ivy. You know, you can make tea with it if you've got a lot around. This is not one that we've harvested and then dried and saved for making tea. We've made fresh plant tea a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
It's mild in flavor. It's, you know, relatively tasty. Kind of like plantain in some ways. So,
you know, it's the mint family, so it has a little...
A little bit of aromatics in there. They're pretty mild, yeah. But anyway, yeah, we've mainly done it with tincture. And, you know, when it comes to tincturing this one, we've done Simpler's method, stuff a jar full of leaves, pour in some vodka.
Brandy.
Some brandy?
I like it better with brandy, especially because I give ground ivy to kids a lot.
Mm.
Just kids are so prone to ear infection, and it's so helpful for ear infection.
Mm-hmm.
And kids like tinctures out of brandy way better than they do out of vodka.
Mm-hmm.
They just taste a little better.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So, let's actually talk about a couple of herbs that are going to be related in terms of their action here. So, the next one I wanted to discuss actually is going to be feverfew. Let me leave feverfew for a minute, because it'll be like a pivot point between this group and the next group. Okay. So, let's actually talk for just a very brief moment about two herbs that I came across when I was doing a little bit of extra digging, preparing for this podcast. Some herbs that I've seen other herbalists reference when they're talking about coping with tinnitus, and especially these two having a relation or being relative to that fluid stagnation issue. So, the first one is golden seal. And this is an herb that I work with occasionally, usually for very specific purposes. It's not an herb that I sort of recommend broadly to people. Usually we're trying to counter the sort of commercial narrative around golden seal, which is herbal antibiotic, and take it when you feel sick, and that kind of thing. Very generic, not targeted, and in a lot of cases counterproductive, but... the reason this could be relevant here, especially if there was that issue of stagnant fluids in the sinuses, in particular, is that golden seal is really good at drying up excess fluid in the sinuses, at astringing the mucous membranes and tightening them up. And so if there was leakiness to those membranes, then golden seal is a really effective herb for that. I've seen older references in... you know, books from the 1800s, and even, in fact, in some translations of like, Asclepius and some of these ancient authors, references to golden seal and herbs like it being helpful for what they called catarrhal deafness and tinnitus.
Catarrhal deafness, is that like when people get giant wads of earwax?
You have, well, maybe the earwax, yeah. It could be potentially that. I'm thinking more of just, like, your sinuses are all stuffed and full and boggy, and it's kind of like your ears feel like kind of like that feeling you described, like maybe you had fluid stuck in your ears, or like you got water in your ear and couldn't get it out.
Yeah, oh, you know? I hate that.
Yeah, so golden seal could be helpful there. I would definitely be combining that with ground ivy, and I would be looking at that... as a small part of the formula, you know, maybe 10%, just to give a little bit more tone, a little astringency, to squeeze out some of those fluids. But only if that was part of the picture, right? Like, if you had that feeling of your head being all wrapped in mucus on the inside, I guess.
Yeah.
And that kind of, like, swampy, gurgly sound in the ears, then golden seal could make sense there. But again, keep it at a relatively small portion. Don't overdo it with this, and I would recommend taking it in formula.
Yeah, so that what you're really going for is that out of your dropper full, only like one or two drops is actually going to be the golden seal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Good. So then another herb that I don't work with super frequently, but which could be helpful, and again, which I've seen a number of other herbalists refer to about working with in the range of tinnitus and ear issues like this, is the herb black cohosh.
It's so funny that you mentioned this.
Yeah?
Well, yeah, because a client asked me about black cohosh this week, and I'm going to give it away. Whatever. You have a note written there about cerebrospinal decongestant, and this client was asking me about it for menopause things, and I was like, you know, that's really not, you know, the way that it's commercialized that way, but that's really not what's going on there. It's really like for whiplash. And she was like, are you kidding me? That's fascinating. And also, holy cow. And,
right.
And I have had black cohosh in my whiplash bucket, like, for a really long time, and I just don't work with black cohosh very often, so it's just been in that bucket. But I've also never really dived in to find out, like, well, why is it good at whiplash? And just the words cerebrospinal decongestant are, like, blowing my mind wide open right now.
Yeah.
So, of course, like, oh my goodness, and of course then that makes sense for tinnitus. And now I'm so inspired to do a formula of ground ivy with a little golden seal and a little black cohosh.
Yeah, I think it could be really useful in some of these cases.
I gotta stop reading your notes because I'm, like, totally stealing your whatever, but
right.
I'm so, like, literally my mind is just, like, there's fireworks going off inside there right now. It's so...
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, black cohosh is one of these herbs that I feel like I haven't spent almost any time with, and... You know, part of that has been that we were never particularly impressed with the whole, like, menopause herb uses of it or that kind of thing. And so we kind of, you know, like, set it aside.
Spend a lot more time, like, myth-busting around black cohosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as a relaxant, it is kind of unique from a number of other herbs that have that quality.
Mm-hmm.
Not least of which because of this affinity it has for the spine and the cerebrospinal fluid. So anyway, yeah, so this would be in that same range of, okay, there's some stuck fluid, you know, that we need to drain or at least to get it flowing again and moving. So you can see how that fits in with those two previous herbs there. It also does have that relaxant quality though, so that could also make it fit in pretty well with the next group of herbs that I wanted to come to, which is more on the relaxant and sedative side. But before we get to them, and let me just say, you know, black cohosh again, if I was going to work with that, I would do it just like you said. I'd get a formula going. I'd have maybe 10% golden seal, maybe 20% black cohosh, and then the rest of the space in there with the ground ivy. And I would start with that, and then...
I am totally making that, like, this week.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely going to do that. I am so excited.
It could be a good one for you in particular.
Yeah, I think...
The sort of tension patterns that you tend to have in a body that's otherwise more prone towards laxity and...
Yeah, but a lot of tension, like, right up around in the head and in the neck and
mm-hmm.
and with a lot of that fluid retention in the ears. And so mm-hmm. I'm just like, I literally, you guys, I, like, want to do cartwheels. I'm so excited about this. If anybody else is feeling that way, then go ahead and blend up this formula also, and then write to me and tell me how it is, and in a couple of weeks then we'll also round, come back around to this on the podcast, and I'll let you know what my experience is.
Cool. All right. Next herb I wanted to address here was feverfew. So feverfew is an herb that has a lot of fame as a headache herb, so it may be one that you were about to talk about in your part of the podcast here today.
I was actually not going to bring up feverfew at all.
No feverfew?
Because it has a lot of fame as a headache herb.
No meadow sweet? Maybe a little meadow sweet.
Maybe a little meadow sweet. Maybe a little
Anyway, so the reason for considering feverfew here, and the reason that it is sometimes helpful for headaches of a certain type, is that it's a draining herb and a cooling herb. So, again, this could be helpful if there were signs of fluid stagnation in the head. In the case of feverfew, though, this is more about draining blood than about lymph or mucus or sinus fluids. So with this one, you would definitely be looking for there to be a pattern of excessive blood stuck in the head. And this would be somebody I would expect to have not just the tinnitus, not just the ringing in the ears, but also a headache. And if feverfew worked for one of those, it would likely work for both. This is one that you can take in tincture. That's probably the easiest way to go about it. You can mix it into tea blends.
You know,
so if that appeals to you, that's fine.
I had a client who found that the most effective way to work with feverfew was to tincture it in white wine.
Mm.
That the tincture in vodka was too intense for the type of headache that this person had, and the tea was not sufficient.
Mm.
And tincturing it in white wine was like the Goldilocks for this person's headache.
Nice.
And this was a person with really hot, stabby headaches.
Right, yep, I remember. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, so feverfew could be one worth considering here. And then crossing over a little bit into, like I said, another category, here we're looking at some relaxant and sedative herbs. So the feverfew's got some of that, you know, the black cohosh has the relaxant quality, but the two that I'd want to highlight here are skullcap and passionflower. So of the two, I'd say that skullcap is the stronger relaxant, and it's like a mild sedative, whereas passionflower is a little bit more of a sedative, and it's a mild relaxant. But I almost always think of the two of them together because they work very effectively for anxiety and for many types of insomnia as a pair. They work really nicely to stop racing thoughts and allow you to rest and settle in and be present in the moment or drift off to sleep. So those are some of the kind of like mental emotional effects you observe with these plants. But on the physical level, they are to varying degrees working to release tension and to calm or quiet nervous activity. And then probably as a result of both of those effects together, they tend to have anti-inflammatory effects that are mostly taking place in the head. So you can see where if we're looking at, again, a matter of excess tension or a matter of nervous overexcitation or inflammation, then you can see where these herbs would make a lot of sense for that. These two tinctures work fine. Tincture blends work fine. You could put these two together and have some ground ivy in there as well, or you know, maybe a little feverfew if you want to include that aspect of things. But so tincture blends are going to be a great way to work with skullcap and passionflower, but you can also take them in tea, and that works just fine as well. About passionflower in particular, there's a quote from the herbalist Michael Moore. He specifically regarded passionflower as useful for headaches that occurred in a hypertensive state along with tinnitus. And so what you're seeing there, the overall pattern is excess tension in the body leading to an increase in blood pressure, and especially that's happening up there in the head, right? There's too much blood and too much pressure in the head, so you want to like release the valves and let it drain out.
Mm-hmm.
The tinnitus here is really coming from the fact that there's all this blood kind of rushing around in the head and not draining out the way you might prefer for it to happen. So passionflower can be particularly helpful there, and I think that again having the ground ivy is like the grounding herb in that formula would make a lot of sense.
You know, speaking of passionflower, you guys might have seen on Instagram this week that I was posting about our winter garden indoors, and This year we've added some new plants, and one of them is passionflower. And so we have three baby passionflower vines that we got from Strictly Medicinal, which is Rico Check's business. And they are growing so much already. It's really, really exciting. We have one in our office and two in our bedroom, and they're beautiful already. I'm so excited about them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to if they flower next year.
Yeah,
because those flowers, if you haven't seen a passion flower,
stop what you're doing right now and Google it.
You really want to.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're the coolest thing. All right, one more herb for tinnitus, and this is ginkgo. Ginkgo is one of the herbs that if you were to just Google herbs for tinnitus, it would probably pop up right away, and you would see a mix of things. You would see some people saying this herb is totally fantastic for tinnitus for everybody, and this is the only answer you're ever going to need, and then you'll see other people saying, well, I don't know, maybe it sort of helps, but maybe not really, and if you look at the randomized controlled trials and the meta-analysis, then they're uninspiring. So that is true. If you do look at, you know, this has been studied quite extensively, you know, at least as far as herbs go. And the pooled results you get when you put all of the different trials and protocols and whatever together, they're maybe a little better than placebo, but we're not sure, right? That said, in the ones that I looked at, placebo was no slouch. You always have to kind of calibrate your not better than placebo, because, like, for instance, in some of those old St. John's wort trials, not better than placebo still meant at least as good as the drugs.
Right.
They were comparing it against. So whatever. But so in this case, you know, there's that. But what I would argue here is that the major problem is that they're not doing syndrome differentiation or constitutional differentiation or tissue state differentiations, which we would always do before giving ginkgo to someone. So the thing about ginkgo that I find really fascinating is that it's a cerebral circulatory stimulant, but it's not a hot and fiery herb, right? Like, it increases the movement of blood through the head, but it's not an herb that generally, like, you give it to somebody and they drink it for a week and now they're running around red-faced with hot type headaches all the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like if you were to give them cayenne or something. So it has this nice balance between getting the blood moving, but also delivering anti-inflammatory effects to the brain and to the other nerves in your head. So that would include the ones in your ears. So ginkgo, I think it would be most helpful in somebody who had, like, poor circulation to the head. And this is going to be quite different from our feverfew type person, or even, in most cases, our skullcap and passionflower type person, where we're seeing a red face, we're seeing maybe some, you know, mental or physical agitation, we're seeing signs of, you know, that excessive blood caught up in the head. For your ginkgo person, it's going to be more of a pale face, deficient circulation, maybe fuzzy, muggy kind of thoughts, you know, just not quite able to get it moving very well. So between getting that blood moving and having that anti-inflammatory effect on the nerves, ginkgo makes a lot of sense for tinnitus. It does seem to be especially helpful in cases where the tinnitus is accompanied by vertigo, dizziness, you know, that feeling like the world is spinning underneath you. In cases where it's been tinnitus together with vertigo, the results for ginkgo have been a lot more impressive than for tinnitus on its own or for other kind of combinations. And also in cases where it's tinnitus happening in an elder, and oftentimes this accompanies a state of dementia, especially in the early phases. Again, ginkgo has been found helpful for both sides of that problem. And I think the reality is that it's just a matter of poor circulation to the brain.
Yeah.
You know, just not enough blood, enough oxygen, enough heat and light and fire. So so the herb is really handy there. Okay. And with ginkgo, you can drink tea. You're going to get a stronger effect from ginkgo if you do work with a modern standardized product, because they do tend to bump up the concentration of the ginkgolides, which seem to have the majority of this effect. But honestly, I've made simple tinctures of ginkgo, you know, in a jar on the counter, and I found them to work just fine. So I'm not saying it's a necessity, but if you are looking for like a rapid turnaround, or if you're recommending herbs to someone who isn't going to be patient enough to wait a few weeks and all of that, then you might want to go with a standardized product. Maybe.
I was going to say you really had a phase there of ginkgo tea.
Yeah.
And found it very effective.
I did like the ginkgo tea.
In that like getting circulation going in the head aspect.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked it paired with tulsi for that.
Yeah.
That would be good. A little peppermint can make sense there. You've got options. Yeah. Okay, real quick, a couple of other thoughts around tinnitus. There are some supplements that seem to make a difference here. Calcium, magnesium, zinc. You know, for us, calcium, we primarily prefer to get it through food sources, bone broth, meat from healthy animals, green leafy veggies. It's not very difficult to get adequate calcium if you're eating real food. So as long as eating real food is an actual option for you or an attainable possibility, then that's the way to go there. Magnesium is one that we generally do have to supplement with, especially when people are deficient. If magnesium was a problem, you might have other things along with the tinnitus. You might have restless leg, you might have cramping. There could be other issues going on with that, but you'd be more likely to have a tension pattern, because magnesium deficiency leads to accumulations of tension throughout the body. And zinc is one that you can supplement with it for a little while, or you, I don't know, if you eat oysters a bunch, then there's a ton of it in there.
Well, that sounds like a much nicer way.
Yeah, zinc supplements, I mean, we whenever it's a mineral supplement, we prefer to use the liquid versions, mostly from Trace Mineral Research, but those just work really well. Zinc is a little heavier on the flavor than the other ones.
Yeah, it's not very delicious.
Yeah, it's a little like pennies or something, but anyway, whatever. There's different ways to take supplements with that, but that may be worth investigating, especially if the diet hasn't been fantastic. I saw some references to melatonin supplementation being helpful for people with tinnitus. I wasn't able to dig into it too much further and see what is the proposed mechanism of action there. We're often skeptical around working with melatonin in supplement form. We prefer you to make your own out of your brain. So I wonder if more consistent, high-quality sleep would also solve the problem in those folks.
I really think that's a huge factor, and that's, it's funny because we did not write our notes together. Like, I didn't even know what you were going to talk about until we sat down. But I'm going to reiterate some of the things that you're saying, and one of those things is sleep. And in every case, sleep has been a factor in tinnitus that I've worked with.
If we think about it energetically, sleep is a cooling process. I mean, like, it's the place where we do our inflammatory cleanup and our detox work. And, you know, relative to this, I'm thinking primarily of giving the nerves a chance to rest and to recover and to not have new input coming in or not to be processing it in the same way while you're in the state of sleep. And, you know, maybe a lack of that kind of recovery time. I mean, so many of our lives are totally overstimulated from the moment you wake up until the moment you go to bed. So
it's really a factor in life today, and I think it's a factor even if we're the kind of people who say, wow, this, the way that humans live life today is unsustainable, or like whatever, even people who are thinking about this, like, you can't overstate how important it is.
One other comment here. There are a number of pharmaceuticals that can induce tinnitus as a side effect. So if you have pharmaceuticals in your life, you definitely want to go down the list of side effects and see if that's included, and then, you know, maybe have a chat with your pharmacist or your MD or whatever, to see what your options might be to work around that. But there are some over-the-counter drugs that do this as well. And if somebody has ringing in the ears and they also take aspirin regularly, then that is something that you should look at. Excessive consumption of aspirin can lead to tinnitus. And this is coming out of the salicylate content there, so the salicylic acid. it's conceivably possible to induce that through giving herbs that contain salicylates. In fact, if you look back to like the eclectics, they would sometimes say the dose of willow bark for this condition is as much as it takes to give the person ringing in the ears, and then you stop.
Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, that's not a great plan. You don't really want to generate that sensation. But anyway, my main point here was if somebody has, you know, an aspirin habit that's extensive and, you know, consistent, then that could be causing tinnitus. If it's doing that, though, it's probably also causing ulcers and other problems, and you have more than one reason to try to step away from that. I don't want to minimize the fact that people take these drugs because they're in pain and they don't want to be, and you can't just decide to stop. Or you could, but now you've got the pain to deal with. And so it's a balancing act, but there are definite herbal options for coping with the pain and getting away from the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. So maybe we'll cover that in a future episode, but
yeah.
Yeah, but it can be done. So anyway, just be aware that excessive salicylate intake, including aspirin especially, can cause tinnitus. And then a couple other things aside from the herbal here. In at least a couple of cases of clients who've come in with ringing in the ears where it was, where it seemed to definitely be an issue of the fluid stagnation in the ear, nose, throat, head and neck, neck rolling exercises have actually been quite helpful. So by that, you know, first you want to get yourself settled and have a nice long spine, like all the way up through the top, through the crown of your head, right? And then maintaining that length in the neck, you can make circles, you can roll from one shoulder to the other, you can roll backward, be careful, make sure you keep that neck extension as you do it. You can go all the way around in one direction and then swing back in the other way. You can just be turning your head from side to side. You can bring the ear toward the shoulder. You can bring the ear toward the shoulder and then turn your head a bit. Just basically trying to get through all the different range of motion in the neck, as many different angles of flexion and extension as you can work through slowly, gently, in a kind of rhythmic way. It really does help to get those fluids moving again.
You know, and so many people spend their work day looking at a computer, and that's a very like kind of frozen physical state.
Yeah.
And so just adding some movement in that way. It's funny because I'm going to talk about that too. Like this, this was so perfectly whatever, and we did not plan it this way.
Yeah.
Oh, funny.
All right. So yeah, so neck rolling movements and stretching and things like that, that's really helpful. And then the last thing I would recommend would be acupuncture, and this more on the side of the inflammation in the nerves leading to that sort of buzzing, that slightly unplugged, you know, audio input jack sort of situation going on. Acupuncture could be really helpful there. I've had a couple of clients who, between the herbs that we were working with and the acupuncture they got, they were getting to a really comfortable place. So look into that also. All right, those were my tinnitus thoughts. Anything that I left out, maybe? Or
No, that was awesome. And like I said, I seriously can't wait to make that tincture.
Cool.
It's going to be really, really exciting.
Nice.
So feel free to experiment with me, you guys. Okay, well, I wanted to talk about headaches, both because Bernadette suggested it, and then right after she suggested it, I got this, like, major, terrible, crappy headache at the beginning of the week. And so I was like, well, clearly I need to talk about this week. So the thing about headaches, though, is that, well, actually, just like everything else about herbs, it is not like pharmaceuticals. So there isn't one herb for headaches, even though you've probably heard that feverfew is the herb for headaches. There's not just one. There are herbs, and there are headaches, and we have to match them up right, which on one hand makes the whole process a little bit harder, but on the other hand, I think that that's a lot better, because you're not supposed to get headaches, right? Like, if you're getting headaches, there's a problem. So if you have to take a little bit of thought to get the right herb for your kind of headache, that means that you're also getting a little bit of thought about why you're having those headaches in the first place. And so you can start to work on that part of the problem too. So in other words, there's a little bit more effort up front than if you just like pop an Advil, but the end result is a much more thorough solution. So, as usual, I prefer the hard way, is what I'm basically trying to say.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's break it out like this. Let's talk about some root causes, and then I'll talk about some types of headaches, and then I'll talk about the herbs that we match up with each type. Okay. So the most common causes of headaches is reactions to things that you're eating, dehydration, lack of sleep, and stress. And there are definitely others, like I'm giving up coffee and the lack of caffeine is giving me headaches. But these kinds are really specific and we usually know right away what those are. So I'm just going to set those aside for now. But these other four are like really big categories that play a role for most people. And sometimes they're a little bit mysterious. So they're worth talking about. The most common food causes, to start with that one, are gluten, dairy, MSG, and artificial additives. That's not the only causes. So for you, if you have a food trigger, it might be different, but these are the most common ones. Some people, when they hear that food can be a cause, they say, yeah, I thought it might be that. And they're really excited to like figure out how they should go about figuring out which food it is. And other people say, there's no way I'm changing my diet, just give me an herb. All that gluten nonsense is just a fad. My feeling is science is the answer. It doesn't really matter if it's a fad or not. If making a change means that you don't get headaches, I say you should go with it. And the only way you're going to know that is to do some experimentation. So whether you're totally into the idea of experimenting with food or whether you are totally not, don't knock it till you try it. You got to try it. So the Whole30 is my favorite way of figuring out food sensitivities, and that is Whole30, W-H-O-L-E, like entire, Whole30.com. That's my favorite method for figuring out food sensitivities, and it's an elimination diet where you just take out basically all of the most common inflammatory foods, and you just do it for a month, and then you start putting them back in, and it's really a very methodical approach. And so, yeah, it kind of stinks for a month because no pizza, you know, like whatever. But you guys, like, we are gluten-free and dairy-free, and we've been that way for 15 years. And, like, there is life after Domino's. I promise. And so it's not easy, but it's also, it's just a month. We can do it. And frankly, when you're doing it for a headache, sometimes you don't even need the entire month. Sometimes a week or two is totally sufficient to find the culprit. So anyway, it's what I'm trying to say is that it is definitely worth trying. And also, if you feel like giving up a food for the rest of your life is too hard, then don't give it up for the rest of your life. This is an experiment. It's an experiment for a few weeks so that you can get some data. And once you figure out your particular triggers, like, oh, whenever I eat gluten or whenever I eat dairy, I get a migraine, whatever it is, it doesn't necessarily mean that you'll never eat those things again. It just means that you're not going to do it the night before your big presentation at work when you have to be your best. If you know that a particular type of food is your headache trigger, then you're the one in control of your headaches, and that's power. A lot of people feel like, well, I don't want to have to give up something for life because then what if I travel and it's hard? Like, well, what if you do? Then just eat it then if you want to. Like, you're still the one in control, but now you have knowledge that puts you in the driver's seat for your headaches instead of your headaches, like, being in control of your life. So, okay, so that's food. Dehydration is a super common headache trigger. So common that basically I tell everyone, if you get a headache, the first thing to do is drink water. It's actually better to drink water with something in it. So either some minerals, and for that I like Concentrace from Trace Minerals Research. They don't pay me to say that. I just really like their stuff. And it's just like liquid mineral drops that you put into water, just a couple drops. But tea is also a great answer, especially something super hydrating like a cold infusion of marshmallow root or linden. That can be really, really good. And a bath is a good answer too, because you rehydrate faster in a bath than you do by drinking water. In fact, actually, taking a bath is the fastest method of rehydration short of an IV. So that is really important information to stick in your memory banks, because if somebody has a fever, for example, the time when a fever gets dangerous is when there's dehydration. So just remember, a bathtub, it's the fastest way. The one thing to stay away from, though, is bottled water, unless you add minerals to it, because so much bottled water is reverse osmosis filtered, and there aren't any minerals left in that. Or even worse, they're using distilled water, and you can't actually drink distilled water. Distilled water is for putting into your clothes iron so that you don't get calcium deposits or like mineral deposits on the metal of the iron, but you can't put that in your body. It's actually not safe to drink. If you drink distilled water, it will leach minerals out of you because of molecular reasons. I don't want to get sidetracked, but you need the minerals to be in you. So what I'm saying here is that I'm not a fan of Gatorade, but they're totally right about the electrolytes thing. You got to put something in your water, and you got to drink water. Just do it. Okay. The next big thing is lack of sleep. And you guys, I can't even, like, sleep plays such a huge role in every single aspect of health. And the thing is that a lot of people today think that, like, oh, but I'm getting 7 hours of sleep, and like, that's more than most of my friends get. No, human adults require 8.5 to 12 hours of sleep every single night. And as the weather gets cooler and darker, we need like 11 to 12 hours. At the height of summer, we get away maybe with 8. But seriously, you guys, you got to be thinking in terms not of 8 hours of sleep, but of 9 hours of sleep as really being the minimum requirement. And it's actually the real minimum requirement. People think, well, 8 hours of sleep is the minimum requirement, and I got 6, so I'm going to be fine. No, 9 hours. 9 hours you got to sleep. If there is one single intervention that you make for your health this year, please let it be to get more sleep. I know how hard it is because there's so much to do. But listen, if you sleep 5 hours a night consistently, you're at a 300% increased risk of heart attack, even if you're eating vegetables and whatever else. So even if all you can do is get 30 minutes more sleep a night, that's better. So do that. But it does. It plays such a huge role in headaches. And all right, whatever. That's sleep. I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
I just got a new book about chronotypes, and I think it's going to make you so mad.
You just really want to be a person who doesn't need to sleep. And the thing is, you do need to sleep. You just like to sleep on a shifted schedule, but you actually do sleep 9 or 10 hours a night.
Yeah.
You just start at a later point.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's more what this is about, actually, is like there could be these little offsets that people have. And
yeah.
Yeah.
It isn't that you don't need the sleep. You actually do. You just want it to come
slightly
much later.
Yeah. Right. slightly later, like maybe 3 or 4 hours after you went to bed.
Yeah, we do. This is a thing that we talk about a lot. It's pretty fun being married to people, like when your job is to take care of the health of people, including you, and you're married to a person who's that's also their job.
It's very revealing in the way of how, you know, the shoemaker doesn't have great shoes for his family and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, like, that cross-referenced with, like, you can't fix your spouse.
Right.
Those two things put together, like, yeah, it's pretty fun.
Pretty good.
But it is actually pretty fun.
And we take care of each other.
Yes.
That's the way this really works.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, but wait, I was going to talk about stress.
Right.
So stress is the last big headache trigger that I want to talk about here. And the thing is that sometimes we can change our stress levels and sometimes we can't. And I kind of think that, especially these days, more often we kind of can't. But there are a lot of actions that we can take around stress. Obviously, sleep more, eat more vegetables. Even if you still eat pizza and steak and cheese and whatever, just add more vegetables to your food. Even just that is going to be a huge benefit. Take 5-minute stress breaks, stretch breaks, do whatever. And really, I think that the most important thing you can do if your life is really seriously stressful is find a way to take a sick day, sleep late on that day, and then spend the rest of the day making a plan for managing your stress better. If all you ever do is react to the things in your life because that's all you have time for, then you will never get ahead. But the reality is, you do have time to stretch, even if you're busy and even if you're working multiple jobs and even if you have 2 kids. And yes, my brother, I am talking to you. My brother is amazing. He is an extremely talented person, and he's just like every part of my brother is such an amazing person. But he's so stressed. So Billy, take a minute. Stretch. It's so important. And taking a minute to do these things, and I keep harping on stretching because I do think it's a really good way to manage stress and because it's a really integratable thing in your life. It doesn't mean you have to spend an hour going to yoga class. Instead, it could literally be in between emails, just stand up, wiggle, touch your toes, twist side to side, roll your head, and go back to work. It doesn't need to take more than a couple minutes. Or like every time you go to the bathroom, just build a habit of stretching for a few seconds. No one is going to know. Just stretch for a few minutes, take some deep breaths. You already got up from your work to go to the bathroom. Nobody is timing how long you're in the bathroom. So take 45 extra seconds, give your body a little shake, like get everything kind of realigned, recenter yourself, and then go back out to work intentionally. Like having had a minute to yourself and having intentionally taken a minute for yourself, even if it is literally 60 seconds, you did that. And the thing is that every time you do it, it's really empowering because it's not just about helping your body to function better and getting the blood moving better and whatever else, but it's also a reminder to you that you are the one in control. And that even though you're really busy, you are actually taking time for self-care. Your work is really important, or maybe just your boss thinks your work is important, but your body is also really important. And even just really little things can make a huge difference in the way that you respond to stress and a huge difference in the way that you feel about your stress load. So, okay, whatever. So that's the end of that rant. Those are 4 super common things, and I could talk about any one of those for like a kabillion jillion hours, but I'm going to leave it at that. But hopefully those are some inspiring things. And now let's talk about some types of headaches. So this is going to get into energetics a little bit, which also when you were talking about tinnitus, you were there too. Listen, energetics is not hard. It is unfamiliar to a lot of herbalists, but it's super important. It's just a weird old word that means the way we describe the state of the body. And if we pay attention to it, it makes our practice of herbalism so much more successful. So it is really, really important. You can get more information about energetics in our free video course, which is called The 4 Keys to Holistic Herbalism. It's right on our homepage, right at the top. It's commonwealthherbs.com. You just click the green button right at the top and sign up for the class. It's totally free. It's by video. It's short. And we do have a longer class that teaches integrating energetics into your understanding of herbalism because it is really so important to get this stuff right. But sign up for the free course. It'll give you a really good foundation and And hopefully it'll take away some of the, like, intimidation factor around energetics, because it's unfamiliar at first, but then we start to realize that it's not actually that unfamiliar. And so let me give you some examples while I'm talking about headaches. The terms we're going to focus on for what I'm going to talk about, now obviously there's more types of headaches, but these are the big important ones. And they're factors that are going to play at least a partial role for most people, so that's why I want to bring these up. We're going to focus on hot or cold headaches. And you might be like, I have no idea if my headache is hot or cold. But you might be describing your headache as stabby. Stabby is hot, right? Like, who stabs things? Really angry, irritated people. You know, like hot-tempered people. A cold, depressed, lethargic, laying on the couch person does not get up and stab you. Right? Like, that's not what they do. Stabby is hot. And then you can think of cold headaches as being dull pain, right? Stabby and dull are words that we commonly use to describe headaches. And we just didn't realize that they are also words that describe temperature, right? But they are. So the other one that I'm going to talk about today is tense. And that one you definitely already know, right? Like, you, the idea of tension is an idea that you probably have felt many times in your body. The other factors that would come up would be damp or dry and laxity. And laxity is the opposite of tension, like too much relaxation. But I'm not going to talk about those three because they're a little less common, and the other three are super common. So that's what I'm going to focus on for headaches right now. In the four keys to holistic herbalism and in the energetics and the practice of holistic herbalism video courses, we talk a lot about all of them. Okay, if you want to know more about them. But okay, so let's talk about
We totally do.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah. No, you want to learn about that.
Oh, yes, you do. Yeah. But I don't want to tangent. I'm tangenting so much. I'm so sorry, you guys. So let's talk about a hot headache. A hot headache feels like an ice pick, right? If you've ever said, like, I have an ice pick being jabbed into my brain, that is a hot headache. And if you've had that kind of headache, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So what are we looking for this kind of a headache is herbs that will cool it off. Which makes a lot of sense, right? Because if you burn your hand while you're cooking, you go to the sink and you run cold water on it. So if you have a hot, stabby, jabby headache, we're going to essentially run cold water on it, except we're going to do that with herbs. So some herbs here that are super favorites for me are linden, lemon balm, willow bark, meadow sweet, even wood betony. Linden we're going to do as a cold infusion, is going to be ideal. A hot infusion will be fine, but a cold infusion is really ideal. A cold infusion is just making tea with with room temperature water, not, boiling water, and letting it sit for several hours. There's a lot more detail on how to make the different types of infusion in the medicine making course online, But linden, it's great to do as a cold infusion because it's going to be so moistening and soothing and cooling. Lemon balm is cooling also. Really, all of these are very cooling plants. So with the linden and the lemon balm, we're really looking at cooling off the nerves, the nervous system specifically. Whereas willow bark and meadow sweet have more of a kind of like pain relieving action, like an actual analgesic action in a cooling manner. Those are two plants that have salicylates in them. Mm-hmm. And so they are kind of more in the aspirin direction, just a little.
There's a lot more going on in there.
You know, like with aspirin, a little more complex.
Yeah. With aspirin, you get acetylsalicylic acid, and that's it.
Yeah.
With willow, you get some salicylate. Compounds of various types. You get some flavonoids. You get some other various anti-inflammatory things.
So. A lot of various. And with meadow sweet, too. Tons of anti-inflammatory mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
All right, good. If your headache is cold, you might be using words like dull ache to describe it. And I get these a lot. Often for me, If I put some pressure on my forehead, it actually feels better. It's often behind my eyes. And my very favorite herb for this kind of headache is ginger chamomile. And you're like, that's two herbs, Katya. Yes, it is.
Not to her, it's not.
Yes, it is, but I just mush them together like those big, long German words. And it's just one big herb for me. And I prefer it as tea, and I prefer it warm because then I'm getting the warming action going as well. But I will use a tincture of ginger and chamomile if I don't have time for tea or if I just don't feel good enough to make it. It is ridiculously effective. I can't even tell you. Ginger stimulates circulation and gets fresh blood moving to the, well, I was going to say to the head, but actually it gets fresh blood moving everywhere, which for me is usually part of the problem. Like, for me, the headache is just a symptom of everything else stagnating also. It's not just mm-hmm. in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really worth
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ginger is also super antispasmodic, super anti-inflammatory, and those play big factors for me as well. If you have any kind of autoimmune issues going on and you have a tendency towards headaches, then that doesn't necessarily mean that your headaches are autoimmune in nature, but it does imply that there's some inflammatory crossover going on with your headaches. So that is a place where ginger is going to be really appropriate. Chamomile is a nervous system relaxant, and it's also really antispasmodic and anti-inflammatory. And this is going to come up again when we talk about tension headaches. But it is a combination that just works for me every time. I also really like calamus tincture in this case, and especially if maybe I ate something that's sitting a little heavy in my stomach along with my headache. Calamus is warming, it's relaxing, it really improves digestion, and really helps the body move very effectively into the parasympathetic state, which I find super helpful when there's a headache going on, because a headache it's stressful, and it's, even if you didn't have tension before the headache, once you get the headache, you're building tension, you know? So something that will move you out of that place is really important. All right, if your headache is a tension headache, then you're going to want relaxing herbs, which makes sense. And I'm thinking here about headaches where there is also tension in the neck or tension in between the shoulder blades, but also tension of spinning thoughts, like your to-do list is running through your head, stuff like, or the, you know, you're just like running through the same negative storyline over and over again, like whatever is happening in your head, but that same kind of tension. So herbs here are going to be ones like skullcap, who can really release the muscles between the shoulder blades and at the base of the neck, as well as spinning hamster wheel in your head when you're just like running your to-do list over and over again. Wood betony is another one here that can help bring that energy out of the cerebral space and back into the body. It almost like if you imagine that your brain is just like amped up on overdrive and you need to like divert some of that energy, so that your brain can slow down, that is an action that wood betony can really help with. You know, and even peppermint can be really excellent, especially if you're a person who has a tension headache and you're feeling kind of hot, because peppermint is both gonna get stuff relaxing and moving, but it's also going to help you to like dispel some of that heat. Elderflower is another one that is really lovely in that particular situation. If you're having a tension headache and you're feeling cold, or you're having a tension headache and you're a person who typically runs cold, then we're back to ginger again because of that antispasmodic action that will release the tension in the muscles, but also in the brain, and it will warm you up, right? So is this making sense with the like energetics of, okay, I'm feeling too cold, so I don't just need to Google like herb for headache and pick the first one. you might still Google herbs for headaches, but then you're going to choose a warm one off that list, and then your chances of success are going to be so much higher. Mm-hmm. It's okay if you have to try a few different herbs at first until you get the right one. Not only actually is that okay,
that's
but it's perfectly reasonable to, like, just like if you're going to start a new exercise routine, maybe the first workout class you go to isn't, like, maybe you try Zumba and you're like, actually, I don't love it. And then maybe you try volleyball and you're like, oh, I don't love team sports. And then maybe you go to, like, Pilates and you're like, ooh, it's perfect. You know, like, it's exactly the same when you're choosing herbs that are going to match your body. It's okay if you try a couple of them to get just the perfect one.
Yeah, definitely.
My pet pattern of headaches, it's usually a cold tension headache. And I think that's why I love ginger chamomile so, so much, because it handles the cold aspect and it handles the tension aspect. But anyway, hopefully you can see some patterns that you have in your headaches in the list that I describe here. We have a much longer class that we teach on headaches. And I just realized that we have not filmed that. So I'm going to try in the next month, in the month of October, I'm going to try for us to film that for you and get that up online so that if you're a person who deals with headaches a lot, either in your own head or in the heads of people you love, that you can get way more in-depth about this if you want to. But for now, hopefully this gives you a good starting point of how to think about working with headaches and some directions to experiment in.
Yeah. Cool. All right, folks. I think that's it for the week for our podcast. Yeah. One thing that I did want to just refresh a mention of, we do have a crowdsourced project going on right now, I suppose.
Yeah.
We are trying to transcribe our video program for a student of ours who's currently incarcerated and doesn't have access to any audiovisual technology of any kind.
Yeah,
so
he's allowed to take the program only if it's on paper.
Yeah. So we have had a couple volunteers already, and I've been in communication with them, so thanks to both of you. But if anybody else out there would like to get involved, just drop us an email, mm-hmm. and basically what we'll do is we'll be giving you access to one of the courses in our program, and we'll assign you a video to transcribe, and once you get that done, we'll give
you
the
next one.
If you
want another one, we'll give you
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We would really love to have a team of like 10 people who want to work on this, you know, over the course of time. And it's a great way for you to study, because you're taking notes for yourself and taking notes for someone else. So,
yeah. And while you're working as a transcriber, you'll have access to, you know, the other materials in the course anyway. So
yeah.
If that sounds appealing to you, then drop us an email, info@commonwealthherbs.com.
And that's info@commonwealthherbs.com.
Thank you. and we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
All right. Other than that, have good days.
And
we'll
see
be back
next week.
Bye.
Bye.